This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. It's the Thursday edition of Sharp Money here from VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, live from Las Vegas in our South Point Sportsbook studio. I'm Ben Wilson, in for Patrick Maher. Amal Shaw is here on the desk. New producer for us behind the glass, Brian Ortega, host of the Concierge Confidential podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, here in town. We had to get the plug right off the bat, so Brian said wouldn't get too big, Amal, but here we go. A lot of sports to talk about today. A lot of day games. We're going to get your preview on the big AL East matchup atop the top that division, with the Orioles taking on the Rays from the Trop coming up in a few hours. A lot going on as well in the day baseball. But for now, Amal, some NFL headlines to get to right out of the jump. And I'm sure you were having a good laugh at the Saquon Barkley quote that just came out and is now making the headlines out of the New York Giants, saying, "I might have to take it to this level as far as sitting out the season." So, yeah, interesting.
Look, I think if you're Barkley sitting out, I know it didn't work out particularly well for Le'Veon Bell, but I don't think with Saquon Barkley it's going to be as bad, because remember one thing with the Steelers, you had Ben Roethlisberger, who's a far superior quarterback to whatever Daniel Jones has been in his career. I thought Daniel Jones, and somebody had sent me a direct message on Twitter, and great job by them, they were saying that Barkley was not as effective in the pass game as I may have alluded to, and they were correct on that. However, I would point this out. I don't think Daniel Jones is as good of a quarterback without Saquon Barkley in the backfield. I think it would hurt the Giants. I actually think it would hurt Daniel Jones' long-term viability with the Giants. To me, if you are Saquon, you've got to kind of dig in here. He's already made $38 million in his career being the second overall pick. He's had a ton of endorsements off the field, Ben. I think this is where you draw a line in the sand. And look, I know people don't want to hear this, but man, it's $38 million, and you're getting your body beat up every day. What's the worst-case scenario if you don't play or you walk away from this? I get it's $10 million, a lot of money. And I always get annoyed when people go, "Oh, it's $10 million, I'd show up." Well, you know what? Then go play in the NFL. You're not there because you're not good enough. And so if you're good enough, people will pay you that kind of money depending on what you do for a living. But I think he's drawing a line in the sand. It's perfect. Pollard, on the other hand, he's got to be there because he's only made under $4 million in his career. And I'm not trying to say that's chump change, but based on where Saquon is financially compared to what Tony Pollard is, two different stories. He's going to take the $10 million. We don't even know if he's going to be able to return at full strength.
And the quarterback situation, too, for the Giants. Daniel Jones coming off his lowest interception rate of his career, 1.1%. Don't you tend to think them all with mediocre quarterbacks? And we don't need to get into the whole debate on Daniel Jones, but statistics would bear out. He's been about a league average quarterback, even last year, his career best season. Trying to replicate a just over 1% interception rate, going to be really difficult, no matter who you have around you. And you would like to think that adding a above average running back to the fold would at least try to help that, as the Giants try to avoid some regression that a lot of people view as coming this year.
You're absolutely right. I think this team got hot late in the season, and I think they're getting a ton of credit for one playoff win. Ben, there's a propensity to do this all the time in college basketball. When a team wins a conference tournament or knocks off somebody in their conference tournament, people think they're going to have a deep run in March, and then you see them get bounced in the first or second round. I just don't love this Giants team. Look, the odds makers don't believe in them that much either. They're plus 160 to make the playoffs. The NFC is wide open. There is just a glut of bad teams in that conference, and you have the New York Giants sitting at 7.5 wins at plus 160 to make the playoffs. I'm not saying that the odds makers are correct. However, if you just go based on their numbers alone, they don't believe in this team.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, too, because as much as I would be tempted to just hammer the under on the Giants, there's so many signs that point to regression coming. Let's just go back. Let's say that we were in the year 2003 instead of 2023, and the Giants do what they did last year. They make the postseason, win a playoff game, despite having one of the worst one through third quarter advanced numbers, the expected wins in the NFL. They were a bottom 10 team first, second, and third quarters. We're the second best team in the fourth quarter, which is something you figure them all. You don't need to be a major math head or analytics guru to figure out that is very hard to duplicate. Wouldn't in the past, though, a lot of odds makers put their total, say, 9.5, 10, just because previously, before we had the market is getting wise to the perceived regression coming in, you would just assume, all right, well, a team was that good, they're probably going to be around the same level again. Whereas now the market seems to be all over this. And I just wonder, is that already baked in so much that there's not really any reason betting it now that it is 7.5? Remember, they were 7.5 last year on the win total.
Well, that was the point I was going to make. I think this team is really what they were last year or the year before to a certain extent. They've got better coaching, as we know. But overall, I don't think this team is that good. Look, if you go back and watch that playoff game against Minnesota, they were able to run the ball with Daniel Jones against the Minnesota Vikings. That's where the defensive problem or breakdown was for the Minnesota Vikings. I'm with you, Ben. I just don't see the affinity for this team. If things break well, they win 9 games. If they don't, I think this team is around 8 or 7 wins. Mm-hmm. But to me, I'm not sold on Daniel Jones. Good for him. He got paid. I mean, look, there's a lot of inept quarterbacks that get paid in the NFL. because the position always requires somebody, and there's just not enough. There's not good enough quarterbacks out there. But I think Saquon Barkley is still the straw that stirs the drink on this offense.
And think about the other team. I mentioned Giants' second best fourth quarter team last year. Mm-hmm. The team who was better, the only one, the Minnesota Vikings, who they are now getting all that credit for beating in a playoff game. It also just goes back to, I think the perception now has become, and a lot of these stats have been thrown out there about valuations of running backs in the NFL and just the raw salary numbers, where if you go back to 2009, Amal, how many running backs who led their team in rushing were making over $2 million in that particular season? How many since 09? That's 13 seasons now of Super Bowl champions.
I have no idea.
The answer is one.
Wow.
And it is not even a guy who's classified as a running back. It was Percy Harvin with the 2013 Seahawks, who's making $2.5 million.
Wow.
So I think that's where a lot of this conversation comes into on Saquon Barkley, which makes, I want to transition you to the Detroit Lions, as they did make a move, a very small move, but it makes it so funny to me where they decided to draft a running back so early when you had a potential generational defensive lineman and Jalen Carter on the board. Lions trade up and they decide, you know what, even though you can get running backs at this bottom bargain barrel price, let's just pass on a huge positional need we have.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you think about this, you see teams, they took Jahmyr Gibbs out of Alabama at the 12th overall pick, and it came as a shock to many people. But what really is surprising to me is the league has gone to a point where they devalue running backs. So why are you taking any running back in essence before the first 45 picks or even the first 64 picks or getting through the first two rounds?
Completely valid point. And now the Lions are continuing to make moves. They did, this is again very minor, but they did trade for Denzel Mims from the Jets, who was, the reports were Mims was going to be waived anyway at the start of training camp. Jets get back a 2025 conditional sixth round pick. Detroit will send New York a, that's what they sent New York, the conditional, the Jets sending Detroit a 2025 seventh round pick as well in return there. So not one that you really feel like moves the needle, Amon. And the Lions, it'll be a fascinating case study, because if you look at the preseason positional rankings that a lot of sites are putting out, a lot of people are expecting the Lions to be at the very worst, league average. And this was especially on defense. This is a grouping that was among the worst in the league last year. And how many real pieces were added? It's all been offensive improvements the Lions have made.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And look, this team, I think with Jared Goff, has an offensive ceiling. Yes, Amon-Ra St. Brown's a good player. I think Gibbs is going to be a tremendous talent. How he gets utilized remains to be seen. But, you look at this Detroit team, everybody's high on them. They won 5 out of their last 6 games. And if you even go back further, they won 8 out of their last 10 games, which is impressive. But let's break down those victories real quickly. You beat Green Bay, who had an under 500 year. The Bears should have had the second pick in the draft. I wind up with the first pick in the draft. The Giants we talked about, but the Giants went 4-7-1 in their final 12 games of the season. Or I'm sorry, in their 4-6-1 in their final 11 games of the season. But you look at some of these teams. Jacksonville, okay, they did beat Minnesota, but the Jets were a team that struggled. The Bears again, the Packers. So they got 4 wins in that stretch of 8 victories against the Bears and the Packers. To me, this is the Seattle Seahawks syndrome here. Everybody's overreacting to a team because of what they saw down the stretch. And it's like the great Bill Parcells line. You are what your record is. And this is a 9-8 team. They were fortunate. Look, Aaron Rodgers already looked like his house was on the market by the time that game was played Sunday night when you got to Lambeau Field. I mean, that team looked like they were disengaged, were disinterested in that matchup. I think Detroit's got a great shot to make the postseason because they're probably in what I would classify as, I don't know, the third worst division in the NFL.
Sure.
Behind the NFC South and the AFC South. So I'm not ready. I don't know where you come out on this Lions team. They're good. They're solid. But let's not act like they're the second coming of the 85 Bears.
No doubt. Well, the thing I that always kind of sets the alarms off in my head, Amal, is when you have a team that is statistically very, very bad in one category. Lions were 31st in EPA per play on defense last year. Don't really make any legitimate acquisitions. You think about, they'll be relying on a rookie at linebacker, which is always a very interesting, aggressive strategy to take, hoping that that will just automatically translate right away. And that already the personnel rankings from a lot of people are as if to say, and I'm looking right now at ESPN, they did their overall season roster rankings. They have Detroit 17th. So unless you're going to say Detroit now has a top 5 offense and is basically you're combining those two, offense versus defense, that's how you're getting to the 17th number. I just automatically become really, really skeptical when publications that we really trust, smart football people, go, all right, this is now a 17th ranked team when the defense was that bad and they didn't really do much to add. That's all.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I still have some concerns. We'll see what happens. Look, When you have a hot stretch at the end, and people kind of tend to remember that, we have basically a recency bias. I don't know. I want to see what this team does. I want to see what the Packers are, the Bears. I think there's a few intriguing teams in that division. I think even though that division isn't great, it could arguably be the most intriguing division because
sure.
You've got teams like Chicago with Justin Fields. They add in more DJ Moore at the wide receiver position. I'm not sure what Chase Claypool is going to be, but the offensive line is theoretically improved. Green Bay, if Jordan Love is competent and effective without turning the football over, that team could be pretty dangerous. Minnesota, we're talking about the Vikings like they finished 2-15 last year, and this is a team that went 13-4 because they lost one playoff game. All of a sudden, they're the worst franchise in the history of the NFL.
That's why we love these long stretches of July where you see every single narrative hammered into the ground, and a lot of times, you always talk too about just groupthink and how that can sometimes take over bettors' mindsets, and that all of a sudden becomes gospel when it really is far from the truth.
No, absolutely. I'll tell you right now, and a guy like me, I could use a switch. I'm getting killed in baseball right now. The Braves can't cover a run line except when I don't bet them. And, you know, so I'd like to at least take some losing teams from the NFC North. The good thing is I know all these teams are going to falter at some point in time, and hopefully I can be on the opposite side of that.
There you go. That's one way to look at it. The Braves, by the way, part of a couple of games that have already wrapped up. Day games in baseball, that was a huge comeback for the Braves that had a lot of importance. Braves and Diamondbacks had been engaged in a very tight series that the Diamondbacks had looked very, very good in each of the last couple of nights. We'll talk about the baseball up next. There is another big game with divisional implications. It's coming up in about 20 minutes. We'll get Amal's thoughts on that pregame. A lot for us to get to. Josh Applebaum, VSiN Morning Daily Bets, will join the show at 4 p.m. on the East Coast. And Vinny Maliulo, the Hall of Famer from the sports betting side, will stop by from the South Point here at 5 p.m. on the East Coast. That is all still to come. We're just underway on this Thursday edition of Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use promo code VSiN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. It's Sharp Money with Amal Shaw. I'm Ben Wilson, live from Las Vegas, South Point Sportsbook Studio. We'll have more baseball to discuss in a little bit. We've got a few day games on right now. Alejandro Kirk just goes yard for the Blue Jays. 4-0 lead over the Padres in the bottom of the eighth. One of several games with playoff implications. Right now, though, I'm all continuing the conversation. Potential NFL teams to go 5-0 out of the chute. You can bet this at DraftKings, one of many markets that are now available that are kind of the pseudo partial season futures. You don't have to bet a team for the full season, but if you like the schedule out of the gate, you can give it a shot. And Philadelphia certainly is very tempting at plus 380. Trio of teams next, Amal, that sit at a 5-1 right now on the list. The defending champ, Kansas City Chiefs, are the first one I'll throw at you. You look at where the Chiefs are at coming out of the gates here. Start off with the Thursday night game, 49 days away officially now against the Detroit Lions. And then at Jacksonville, which early in the year, that will not be an easy test in the heat humidity of North Florida. They'll also be at the New York Jets and at Minnesota in the first five games sandwiched against a home date against Chicago. So with a team that, look, defensively, Mal, kind of feels like Kansas City is in as good of a place as they have been in quite a long time with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. The question is, how quickly will that all come together under Steve Spagnuolo, and how much do you expect them to make it through that first gauntlet, three road games in their first five unscathed?
Yeah, I think it's going to be challenging. You've got that Sunday night game at the Jets. That'll be a tough atmosphere. Then you go next week to Minnesota. You mentioned they open on Thursday with the Lions. Now, the one advantage they do have with playing the Jaguars on the road in week two is they play that Thursday night game, so you've got three additional days to get ready for Jacksonville. And it's going to be an important game in the AFC because the one thing quietly, Ben, I'm not necessarily high on the Jaguars as maybe other people are. I do believe they win the division, but the Jags could potentially contend for the best record because they're in such a weak division. So you're looking at, you know, going 5-1, 6-0 in the AFC South. So that's an important game. They do have the Bears at home in week three, but based on what we've seen so far, I would take Philadelphia over the Chiefs. And what did you say? The Eagles number was?
Eagles was plus 380.
Yeah. You can see why it's shorter than the number with the Chiefs at 5-1.
It's why, you know, Jacksonville if you are a believer in what that Doug Peterson as head coach and Trevor Lawrence as a quarterback have done, combined with that relatively weak division, like 15-1, there are worse long shot bets for most wins, regular season wins. Jacksonville 15-1.
Yeah, I don't think they'll necessarily get there, but when you look at them and what the momentum brought them last year in that playoff win against the Chargers, it helps a lot. Lawrence takes another step forward in year number three. This team's in a really good position. They've gotten a little bit better. I think this is a good opportunity for this team.
as far as the other 5-1 teams, them all in that grouping, San Francisco, Cincinnati, each 5-1. Between those two, does one interest you more than the other?
I would probably say the Philadelphia Eagles.
Talking about
the 5-1.
Yeah, the 5-1. Yeah. I agree that the Eagles are the one that is the most logical. It's why that's a short shot plus 380. But if you were to go longer, I'm not really in love with any of these. But especially like San Francisco goes road out of the shoot, even though they'll be favored in both games at Pittsburgh and at LA Rams.
I would take in the 5-1. I would take the Niners. You're at the Steelers, no problem opener. If you can win that game at the Rams, I like their chances. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Giants at home on Thursday night, Cardinals at home, and then you have the Cowboys at home on Sunday night. The Cowboys won't be an easy game, but a couple of factors, Ben. You have a great situation to be able to hedge in that final game. The Cardinals should be an easy victory for them. And I just think San Francisco, to me, is still the cream of the crop right there with Philadelphia in the NFC.
Completely agree. That's why I would definitely favor them over Cincinnati. And I'm glad that our producer, Brian Ortega, included the Bengals on this list, because even in the recent couple of years, I'm all aware, under Zach Taylor as head coach, the Bengals have been much better. They have traditionally struggled out of the gates in September. A lot of that was because of new pieces at offensive line. So that could be the one case. If you believe, well, now the O-line has been together, they shouldn't have the same issues. But this is not easy. You go at Cleveland, a rejuvenated Browns team, first year with a full offseason for quarterback Deshaun Watson, home against Baltimore with Lamar Jackson and that new-look offense. Also, road games, I realize, it's kind of like those first 2 weeks are the big ones, though, Amal, because you get at Tennessee, at Arizona, two teams projected to be a bit weaker with a home game against the Rams on Monday Night Football. But I would not touch the Bengals at 5-1, even though those last three games are definitely tempting since they will be big, big favorites.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. But remember, the Browns have had good success against the Cincinnati team with Joe Burrow under center. And an important game for Cleveland in the home opener to start the season. Great opportunity for the Browns there. I agree with you, Ben. However, you could theoretically bet the Browns and bet this 5-1 bet. The Ravens at home, I think they should be able to get past them. But again, it's not a slam dunk with Lamar Jackson and this Baltimore team. You're right, though. As you go down the line after that, the Rams at the Titans, at the Cardinals look very manageable. But I still think Philadelphia and San Francisco are better plays than these two in terms of the matchups.
Agreed. You know, the one that actually did jump out to me as well, as more of a longer shot type bet, was just pulling up the list for the... So the Baltimore Ravens have actually been taken off this market, but Baltimore was earlier up and they were in a double digit range. I want to say it was 11-1 for Baltimore, where just think, you know, at least the first three games, even, you know, this is not necessarily a team you would bet in this market regardless. They're not available right now, but to get Houston and Indianapolis at home in two of your first three games, and also a divisional team that tends, at least historically under the current regime, to struggle early in September. That's as good of a start as you could ask for if you're John Harbaugh as a head coach with those three. If you're watching us, beeson.com, YouTube TV, home Houston, at Cincinnati, home Indianapolis, even though it is Cincy, and that's a daunting task. If you're John Harbaugh, you have to love what you're getting out of the shoot.
Well, I would say yes in the sense that you get the Texans and the Colts in two of the first three games, but I'll tell you what, the season can be decided pretty quickly for this team. You're at Cincinnati, at Cleveland, at Pittsburgh. I mean, my God. Do they want Baltimore to be eliminated from the division race pretty quickly?
Well, it could go. Look, it's one of those things. It could go very well or very, very poorly. Because at Cleveland, at Pittsburgh, then you go to London, and then take on a Detroit. Everybody is seemingly crowning the next Super Bowl champion. So it is an interesting stretch. It's just if you're higher on that team. You know, I just also think about for teams that have different personnel, like new offensive coordinators coming in, who are going to look a little bit different, even if a lot of the pieces are still the same. It is very, very beneficial to get weaker teams on paper, especially at home to start the year, if you're trying to incorporate new things in real NFL regular season offenses.
That's fair. I think from that standpoint, you're absolutely right. But the one good thing for them is the back end of the schedule is not as bad. I mean, you got the Rams. You're at the Jaguars, fine. But Dolphins and Steelers to close out the regular season, you know, you like your chances in those two spots. But last year, they blew a lead, right? It was there to... 35-14 lead against the Dolphins.
Yes, that was week two, I believe. Yeah. And ended up, that was an interesting one.
But you know, outside of the Texans and the Colts, maybe the Titans in London, and that's a home game for the Ravens. That's what's even worse, because Baltimore has got a good home field advantage, good fan base, good crowd. That's a little bit of a challenge, but they don't have. To me, when you go to the back half of the schedule, I mean, the Rams are there, and I mentioned those games at home, but they don't have any layups for sure, right? The Rams might be the one, but you got the Hawks, the Seahawks, the Browns, the Bengals, the Chargers, Jaguars, 49ers, even the Dolphins and Steelers, even though I think being at home, it's a huge benefit. Those are not layups.
No question. And it's why I just look at Baltimore coming out of the gate, and they understand how important those first few weeks are to take care of business, at least in the first those two home games, understanding how tough things actually do get starting in week four at Cleveland. The other team on our list here that we'll break down is the Buffalo Bills. They are 6-1, but when you think about opening the season on Monday night at the New Meadowlands against the New York Jets, I get that you get home Raiders at Washington Commanders. And then a couple of, well, one is a home game, one is a London game against Jacksonville after a home game against Miami. But three of those first five teams are good enough where I would have serious doubts about, like, why would you want to bet the Bills and tie up your money in a prep like that?
I would agree with you. I think, though, the two that you look at, and we've talked about this, Philadelphia and San Francisco, I think both of these teams have a legitimate shot to start 5-0. Even if both don't, I think one of them might.
Oh, easily could. I could easily see it. Meanwhile, Buffalo with that 10.5 season win total, it is shaded over after winning 13 games last year. But I wonder if, like, because I always try to pinpoint. We'll talk a little bit later in the show too. General contest strategy, Amal, since you are always in these Circa Millions, and we'll talk survivor strategy as well. This doesn't really fall into either category, but there's always one game week one that you take away from, and people completely overreact to. I wonder if that Buffalo New York Jet Monday night game could be the overreaction game of week one this year, where let's just say where Buffalo comes out and just looks, it's like all the hype is there on the Jets.
Yeah.
It's a raucous crowd. Buffalo looks shaky out of the gates. Jets win, and we're ready to just completely say, all right, well, this Bills team is completely falling apart and fraudulent like some people thought in the offseason.
Well, I think a couple things. Number one, you have to take into consideration the injury to DeMar Hamlin just from a mental standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge blow for this team, what happened in Cincinnati. They get blown out by the Bengals in the playoff game. I shouldn't say blown out, but they were dominated from just an overall standpoint. If you look at that game, you never felt comfortable or confident if you had the Buffalo Bills in that one. Also, to me, I'm a huge Aaron Rodgers fan. I think he's the most accurate passer I've ever seen. As Mahomes is going to probably go down, in my opinion. And, you know, I don't have a problem if people disagree. I think Mahomes will eventually go down as the greatest quarterback ever. But he's not the most accurate passer when you compare him to me to a guy like Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers is unbelievable. You've got Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson. This team is really good defensively. And think about how many times Zach Wilson was going 3 and out with this offense. I think this team's going to be really dangerous. Don't sleep on this Jets team. Sure. I understand people's affinity for Buffalo and some of the consternation for the Jets, but I think Rodgers just elevates them so much.
It's okay, Mal. When you start bringing up the words Zach Wilson, it's easy to make your brain melt. Hard to put words together. We'll have a lot to discuss at hour number two, starting with VSiN analyst Josh Applebaum right after this on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive over the speed limit, there are lots of sounds you might hear. You could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing, the sound of first responders desperately trying to save you. You could even hear the sound of people crying at a funeral, because if you drive over the speed limit, you could do damage that's beyond repair. One way or another, speeding catches up with you, paid for by NHTSA. A big thanks to Josh Applebaum for stopping by the show here on Sharp Money. Again, give him a follow at Josh_Insights, host of our VSiN Morning Daily Bets and Market Insights podcast. Ready to talk some more college football win totals and all? It's been a fun week with previewing teams with you, because you know every single one of them. So hey,
Ben,
I always enjoy this.
Ben, don't ask questions you already know the answer to. Let's go.
Fair. Come on. Very fair. Well, we're looking, interestingly enough, getting some data from who have been the most bet to the over, most bet to the under. So this is always fascinating just to look at. It's public perception, where the general betting market and public is on certain teams. So we'll throw out first just the overall teams, the top five to the over, top five to the under from BetMGM so far, getting this data. We already talked, if you missed it, go back in the archive, because we talked pretty extensively about the Big 12 yesterday. And one of the five teams of all is Kansas State being bet to the over. You can find them at DraftKings 8.5 over plus 140, which is the one I love out of the Big 12.
Yeah.
So those are ones you and I both really like. Texas 9.5. You said yesterday, your quote was, this is their conference to win. This was right there in front of them for Steve Sarkisian in Texas here. So those were a couple of the most bet overs. But I want to get to a team in the Big 10 we have not mentioned yet over these last couple of weeks together. That is the Iowa Hawkeyes, who are at 8.5 win total, at least at BetMGM, even money to the over. They made the interesting decision, and I only say interesting just because it shouldn't be a surprise in the world of some nepotism you sometimes see in college football and in other things. But Brian Ferentz is back as offensive coordinator despite a completely anemic offense in 2022. 25th season now for head coach Kirk Ferentz. Brian Ferentz, 7th year as OC. And how big of a adjustment do you believe will actually happen offensively, despite all the good things that have been said in the offseason and all of the adjustments that Brian Ferentz claims to have made? This was a Hawkeye offense that set football back about 100 years a season ago.
Well, as a out-and-out spokesperson against Kirk Ferentz, I don't cry any tears the fact that Brian Ferentz is their OC. I look forward to the Hawkeyes having another 7-5 year with Cade McNamara, the Michigan transfer under center. He's terrible. And, you know, I know all these people go, oh, Ferentz has done a nice job. Let me tell you something. You guys must have missed the Hayden Fry era. He had that team ranked number one in the country, okay?
Yeah.
Hayden Fry could flat out coach, and he was in the same location. Last time I checked, they didn't move the school. And this Hawkeyes team will do okay because the Big Ten West is not particularly great. They open with Utah State. Then they've got the Cy-Hawk series against Iowa State, but this time in Ames. I think Matt Campbell's team will be ready for that one. They got to go to State College. That should probably be about a 12-10 Penn State win. It's a game where you look up and you go, why is Penn State not up by three scores? Some reason the Hawkeyes always seem to play them tough. I think Sparty's down this year, so an opportunity there. You've got Purdue at home in back-to-back weeks. At Camp Randall, and then at Nebraska in the rivalry game, they got a great schedule. You're at Camp Randall October 14th. Your next road game is November 24th against Nebraska. Remember, Big Red went into Iowa City last year and knocked off the Hawkeyes, and I think Matt Rule's team is going to be better. That, again, like I said, if you're not from that part of the country, you may not be aware. Great rivalry. 7-5, good year for this team. What's their season win total set at?
It's 8.5, money. Which, and again, I think a lot, this will be very similar to what we'll talk about in a second with Michigan State, who's another top five team bet over by the betting public. It might not be the sexiest team on paper, but it's all about the schedule, and that's the perception for both of those teams.
Yeah, here's the reason why I don't see 9 wins for the Hawkeyes to get to that over 8.5. If you like the over, I go towards the under. Because first of all, I think they're going to lose against Penn State. Penn State should be 10-2 this year. We talked about that the other day. Wisconsin's got a good football team. They're going to be right there with Luke Fickell as their new head coach. Braylon Allen, in my opinion, the best running back in the Big Ten. That's 2 losses. Then you've got also the game against Iowa State. That will not be an easy football game. That could be a 3rd loss right there. At Nebraska, potential hiccup. Illinois is a much improved football team. The Gophers always play for the Floyd of Rosedale against Iowa. Always a tough matchup. So I think this team, like I said, 7-5 to me. 8.5 is a high number. I thought the number should have been set at 7.5. I think the Hawkeyes are a 7-5 team. I'd go under on this team.
The other team in that same ilk is Michigan State, who we figured would have a big drop-off last year, Amal, after star player at running back Kenneth Walker was drafted to Seattle, and sure enough, that happened for head coach Mel Tucker. Only 5 wins, really disappointing year. Tucker getting a whole lot of money to coach a 5-7 team, and now he's back for year number 4. Again, it's now a 5.5 win total, reflecting the 5-win team from a season ago. But interesting, I'm surprised, Amal, to see so many people betting Michigan State over. You are getting +130 on that, but seems like a cover that not necessarily bare, but a lot of missing parts.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. You look at the Spartan team, not a big believer. Right now, the quarterback situation's up in the air. We're not sure what they're going to have in terms of who their starter's going to be. You've got a couple of guys competing at this point in time. That's the big situation right now with Noah Kim, potentially the starter there. I just don't like this team. I don't think they're that good, and I have a lot of concerns about them. And I'm going to tell you what, I love the fact that Michigan State's Board of Regents, their athletic department, is so dumb that they would hire a moron like Mel Tucker to be a lifetime coach for them. Congratulations to Sparty. Enjoy 5-7. I don't know what toilet bowl you get to go to when you're 6-6, but that's what's in the future for this program. Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan are so far ahead of them that those three schools don't even see Sparty in the rearview mirror. Think about this. Remember when they had a highly ranked team? They went to Columbus. Yeah. I think they gave up a 49 spot in the first half against the Buckeyes. Mel Tucker.
That game was 21-0 5 minutes in, if I remember correctly.
It was an absolute blow. Mel Tucker is the Peter Prince of what its finest. You reach your highest level of incompetency. His highest level of incompetency is coaching in East Lansing as a head coach. This team and this program are mediocre. They're stuck in the mud. They're going nowhere with this guy. I can tell you right now, they'll be looking for a buyout in 3 years.
I can't. There's nothing I can say to push back against that. I completely agree.
Who cares about the 5.5 wins? They're irrelevant. Let them go to a bowl game. Let the Big Ten make a little bit more money. They're not that good. They're going to lose at UW. That Huskies game's a tough one. They should beat CMU and Richmond in the first 2 games. Maryland's not an easy out. At Iowa, lose. Michigan, loss. At Ohio State, loss. Penn State. This team's got 5 losses right now from the jump. At Minnesota's going to be another loss. I'm going to tell you right now, under 500, here we come in East Lansing. Boom. When is Midnight Madness at the Breslin Center?
That's a good question. The Izzone already making preparations for 20.
They're going to have a good team. They're going to have a top five team. They've got one of the best coaches in college basketball, and they've got one of the most inept coaches in college football. So you think about which team you're going to support this year.
I would make the same decision as many of the folks in East Lansing will be doing. Speaking of one of the former schools that Mel Tucker was at, Colorado.
Yeah.
What do you make of all? Like, it's not a surprise, right, to see so many people very much in love with and drinking the Kool-Aid of a new head coach and Deion Sanders coming to Boulder. We had Mike Pritchard on earlier in the week. The former Colorado Buffalo won a national championship there under Bill McCartney back in the early 90s. He is invested in his alma mater over three wins. They're at 3.5 now, the most single bet over team, at least from BetMGM, at even money, Amal. What realistically, though, do you expect from a team that you talk about cover being bare? I mean, there wasn't even like a jar of mayo in that cupboard last year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm looking right now at the CU depth chart. I have never seen this before in my life. On their top 44, they have four returning players.
Four.
I mean, it's crazy. Between recruits, transfers in from JUCOs or other colleges, this team is completely different. They get Alton McCaskill, the running back from Houston, who a couple of years ago had a 1,000-yard season. Last year, had a knee injury like that. Kavassier Smoke, I like him a lot at the tailback position. So he's gone out and got some players. There's no question about it. His son, quarterback Shadur Sanders, I have not seen him play, did not watch Jackson State play. But you got Travis Hunter, who is, remember, the number one recruit in the nation. A lot of Florida State people that are still mad at Deion Sanders for taking him away from FSU. He was committed there. So they've got some pieces and some parts. It'll be interesting to see how this thing plays out. If you've never been to CU Boulder, it's one of the most beautiful campuses in the country. Great place to go to school. So I think eventually we'll be able to get things turned around. The schedule right now, when you look at this team, is going to be a bit challenging. They open up with TCU, not an easy game on the road. Then, of course, you're going to play that Pac-12 schedule. Do they get over their season win total? I think it's, what, 3.5?
3.5, yeah.
Probably not. Maybe if they do, it's going to be some early victories and they can build upon that. But overall, look, it's for me, I don't really care what happens in year one. If they go 0-12 or if they get 5 wins, either way, I'm not worried about this year. It's more towards what's going to happen in 2024.
Yeah, I just don't understand why people with so many unknowns, it's impossible to project how a team with, as you mentioned, literally four returners and some names that are very, very highly regarded from the recruiting rankings, but put them together in a locker room and a first-year head coach, it is really hard to just say and feel. Like, how could you have conviction if you're betting a Colorado over, even if you like the pieces coming in?
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying. Here's where I'm going to kind of refute your statement, because sometimes when you have the unknown, it could turn into something great, and if you like it, and look, winning four games over the course of 12 is not an overwhelming number,
sure.
And I get your point, and I think the majority of the time you'd be right in what you're saying. But the one argument I would make is, you know, everyone talks about Deion, and they forget when he played, this guy watched more film than anybody. And, you know, we sit there and we look at certain coaches, you go, well, how's he going to do? How's he going to do? Urban Meyer, everywhere he went, he takes over a 3-9 Bowling Green team, goes 9-3 his first year, goes to Utah and goes 22-2 his second year, he goes undefeated. He goes to Florida, second year, he wins a national title. His fourth year, he wins a national title. Third year at Ohio State, he wins a national title. I'm not saying that Deion Sanders is Urban Meyer. But this is a guy that played in two professional sports. He's a Hall of Famer in the National Football League, arguably the greatest cornerback of all time. He's got talent. He can reach guys. If you've ever seen any of the clips at Colorado, I mean, most people would be ready to run through a wall for him. So I'm not going to discount what could potentially be there. For me, year one doesn't mean as much, and I'm not suggesting he's going to be able to have a Sonny Dykes type of season, because Dykes did have some talent there. But I don't think you should sleep on the Buffaloes in the sense that they're going to just be, you know, 2-10. I think they'll compete. Let's see what happens early on.
Yeah, totally. That's a completely valid statement to make. That's why I look at 3.5. Seems like a very fair win total for the Buffs in 2023. Those are the most bet overs on the win totals in college football. When we return, we'll talk about the five teams who have been the most bet to the under in 2023.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use promo code VSIN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. In 15 minutes, we'll go through our preview rest of the Thursday slate in Major League Baseball, because there is a huge AL East matchup atop that division. Orioles and Rays start a 4-game set at the Trop with first pitch in about an hour and 10 minutes. We'll get our full breakdowns on that coming up in just a bit. Right now, though, talk a little Survivor. Let's do it.
Let's go.
I mean, no time like the present. Start talking strategy. You had a great line off air yesterday, which I would like for you to repeat to the audience. And when I asked you, so when do you sign up for contests? And your response was?
I said, as late as possible. I said, in case I perish in between. I don't want to I don't want to ruin the amount of inheritance I leave my family.
That's so good.
Well, I mean, like, that's here's good. The thing.
I get it. It's
what's the point in signing up on July 20th when you can do it on September 1st? Yeah. I mean, for people that are coming from out of town, I understand. But if you're local.
Yeah, you make very valid points. Where do you stand too on the crowd that feel the urge to put a survivor entry in on the Thursday night game so that if they lose, then they can just rebuy and they have that ability to kind of play the field for game number one.
I mean, look, to me, why not just make $1,000 straight bet on a game? I mean, it's, if you're that concerned about the first game and you're burning Kansas City this year, I don't know if it's necessarily the most prudent play. Look, I can appreciate where people are coming from. I don't necessarily look at it as the best move. I think you want to take your best possible play because the one challenge here is it's like the NCAA tournament, except for 17, 18 weeks.
Pretty much. Well, you've had a lot of success in this contest, as well as millions. We'll talk about the other, and it's not just Circa Millions. There's the Westgate Super Contest, a lot, and now nationally, a lot of different five against the spread picks a week you can make in that. But as far as Survivor goes, you've made it pretty deep in the past, Amal. What are some of the rules that you have tended to live by that some people might kind of scoff at or not really believe are true, yet are, when you look at it, break it down, are actually pretty good ways to approach it?
Yeah, I'll give you one. I tend to not take teams on the road. And, you know, in the NFL, anybody can be gotten any given day. And it doesn't necessarily mean because you're at home, you can't be beat. I mean, we've seen, you know, you mentioned it before we came back, the Jets, they were like 16-point underdogs and they got beat by the Rams. I mean, they beat the Rams at home.
Yeah.
So I think that's just one thing. I just feel like teams at home generally have more success than they do on the road. And it's proven fact in sports. When you look at the pricing in baseball, you'll see a team that's a $2 favorite at home today, Spencer Strider and the Braves, minus $2. If they were in Arizona, probably around minus 125, 135 against Zach Gallen.
Well, that's what made last year so crazy, because you had week one, a ton of road favorites. And San Francisco losing at Chicago was a big one that a lot of people lost their survivor entry on. And I definitely try to follow the same principles. This year's a little bit different, at least because I think some people, again, I don't know where you stand on this either, Amal, where like, there are a lot of people that will map out the entire season from week one to week 18. And in Circa Survivor, for those who don't know, they require you to pick an extra game. The Thanksgiving Day slate is a totally separate entity. The Christmas Day, I'm not sure how that is working out this year, Amal, since Christmas Day is on a Monday now. But at least last year, there were 20 separate weeks, not just 18 weeks. So I look at it and go, how could you have enough conviction to go, this team will suck in week 16? I like to just start at week one and I play it week by week. Now I've never gotten that far. So maybe that's an issue on my end.
So in the first year I got to week 15 and I screwed up. I actually had the play. It was going to take the Ravens. I switched it because Finley was playing quarterback for the Bengals and I went against what I said and I took the Steelers on Monday night. They end up losing. And had I done that, I would have been fine because I was going to take the Saints, who destroyed Minnesota on Thanksgiving or on Christmas weekend Friday, and then take the Pats in the last game of the year, and they won against the Jets. The thing is this. Here's why I map out the entire season. Because two factors. If you don't look to week 10 and you say, okay, Kansas City's playing this weak team now, I'm going to take them, then what do you do when you get to week 10? You should have some thought process of 2 to 3 to 4 teams that you're looking at taking during that stretch. It's like anything else in life. If you don't plan, you know, it's like the great John Wooden line, a failure to plan is planning to fail, right? And
correct.
So it's a similar situation here. People say, well, how can you? No, you're not mapping out the whole season, but you have a pretty good idea. It's like if you make a futures bet, you think that team's going to be there at the end of the year, right? So it's a similar situation. You think that this team's going to be there. Then you adjust accordingly. You know, perfect example, there are some teams like Seattle, Jacksonville. You adjust according to how they're playing. You know, Seattle was a team I was going to go against last year. Didn't matter. I got bounced in week two with the Browns coming back, or Browns blowing the lead against the Jets. The Jets were the first team since, I think, around 1999 or 2000 to come back from down 13 points or more with less than 2 minutes to go. So you're kind of mapping it out. It wouldn't matter. I would have been gone in the third week because the team that I liked in week three would have gotten bounced.
I lost with Tennessee week one last year.
Yeah,
so,
against the Giants.
Yeah.
Bullock missed the kick. But my point is, to me, I'm looking at certain situations like, okay, maybe I'm not necessarily going to play this team, but I've got to have a thought process. So I go through, I do the entire season, and then I will have 2 to 3 to 4 plays that I would potentially look at. Now, in theory, a quarterback could be hurt. A team could be in a tailspin, whatever, things change. But if you just sit there and say, okay, I'm going to take Dallas, San Francisco, Philadelphia, Kansas City, and Buffalo, and Cincinnati in the first 6 weeks, Now, all of a sudden, what do you do when you get to the back end? Now, there is a risk sometimes in saving those teams because they may not be as good as you thought as well.
And I think Circa does an extra bonus if you don't use the Super Bowl teams from the previous year. So, like, if you were to hold off, if you don't use Kansas City or Philadelphia, you get it. There's an extra bonus involved there.
But is that what that is this year? Because that was the case last year with Cincinnati and the Rams.
And again, we're talking kind of basic survivor strategy because there are people who play in more contests than just the Circa one. That is the most popular one nationwide with the giant payouts that they offer there. But I look at the week one card, and it's just interesting this year now, Maul, because you have a bunch of home favorites who are very heavily priced. And so there you could look at it and go, like, I would imagine I would be surprised if many people at all took Kansas City as a 7-point favorite over Detroit, outside of the ones who just want to get one locked in for Thursday night, first game of the year. And if somehow, some way they lose, then they can buy back in.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I don't think you'll see a lot of people on that. But again, look, whatever your personal preference and choice is, you're going to go with it. At the same time, chances are the Chiefs probably win the game. Sometimes it's better than taking a matchup where it's a complete coin toss. You're going to get to a point around week 12, 13, 14, 15. Where you're in certain games that it is a toss-up, and you got to just hope your team prevails.
Sure, absolutely. The thing I also feel like a lot of bettors get, and I include myself in this as well, that it can be a really dangerous game in Survivor, is trying to, for lack of a better term, slough off teams you aren't really high on. But let's say, like, they are home, they are favored, they have a good matchup against a poor team. One that will come to mind right away. It's the Washington Commanders Arizona Cardinals matchup week one. Commanders are a 6-point favorite right now.
Yeah.
I got to think that is going to be a very popular selection simply because most people's logic is, well, when am I using Washington again? This is an awful Arizona team. I'm going to look at the quote unquote bingo square right off the mark. Just get Washington, get him out of the way. Those are ones I always worry about just in general because of the fact that, well, if they aren't very good, they could certainly lose a game like that.
You're correct on that. And Washington with the uncertainty of quarterback could be a problem. But I'll tell you the other thing, unlike in betting, You know, people are like, well, the whole crowd is on that. Well, in Circa Survivor, you don't want to sit there and think about that. And real quick, just to clarify, for people that are unaware, you cannot use the same team twice.
Yes.
So if you've used Washington, you will never be able to use them again, or if you use Kansas City or whomever. But look, I get your point. And Washington's an intriguing play in week one because they take on the Arizona Cardinals, who many people think will wind up with one of the worst records in the NFL. But for me, when I look at a team like Washington, a guy like Kyler Murray, he could be a lot more dangerous in certain spots and situations than other people. So we'll see. I mean, a long way to go in terms of how these things play out. But I will tell you, I think this year is going to be much, much more difficult than I think years past. Because even if Arizona is bad, I still think they're 3 to 4 wins. Whereas there's no team that you're looking at is going, well, that team's 0-17. That team is going to be one that goes 1-16 or something to that effect.
Well, in the year where I believe it was the year you were talking about them all, you made it to week 15, week 16, where I want to say there were like 20 some winners who shared the pot.
Yeah, it was like 60,000 each. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing that year was you had a New York Jets team that was just an auto bet against every week, and the Jacksonville Jaguars were horrible. So essentially what you could do, you pretty much could just play one or the other against those two teams. And it ended up being a situation where there were only a few weeks where you had to find something else, where we don't see that happening this year. Like you mentioned, Arizona has the lowest win total on the board, where, I mean, it's not like a team that is completely going to tank. That's a group that has so much draft capital already. They've got an opportunity they still have a quarterback in Kyler Murray. Not that I expect him to be great by any means, but don't expect any free bingo squares in most weeks, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I like the way you phrase that. You're 100% spot on. I don't think there's going to be that type of team. Now, it could happen. Let's say if Kyler Murray got hurt, then Arizona's in real trouble when you see this team. Remember we saw McCoy play quarterback for them? Yeah. I think they beat the Rams. But the point is, you're going to pay attention to some of these teams that are bad. And you can't worry about, well, like the Washington example that you used, I would say probably 30 to 40% of the contest will be on Washington in week one. But you can't worry about that. Your job is to survive and move on.
Don't worry about the rest. And again, we don't know how long when Kyler Murray actually will come back for Arizona. I think that's part of it too. Yeah. The assumption that it'll be Colt McCoy week one. So Vikings laying 6.5 at home against Tampa Bay. Ravens -9 against Houston week one. Mentioned the Washington spot as well. Those are, and then the Seahawks -5 at home against the Rams. So three home favorites of 5 points or more, and that's not even including the Chiefs opening night. So I wonder if any of those scare you off. I would imagine those four games, though, is where the bulk of the pool is going to be taken from.
I would agree with you. I think you see some intriguing ones. Baltimore's going to be one. I didn't realize Minnesota also has Tampa in week one. So I think those are all games that you could see potentially teams that are played heavily by other people.
Minnesota kind of follows that line of thinking, too. Well, maybe they regress this year. Let me use them now before they struggle against a projected bad Tampa Bay team. All right, we'll transition little MLB to wrap up the show. What do we think happens in this huge AL East top of the division matchup that starts in about 30 minutes?